This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, I'm Sharad Kutin, and with me, Julian Ng and Ibrahim Sani, with the top business stories of the day. We go from Argentina to China, from debt to sugar and a lot of fat, I think, or pink slime, perhaps. Well, we'll start off with the Argentinian story. After nearly two decades of acrimony, Argentina's president, Mauricio Macri, has won approval for a repayment deal, which may see his embattled country obtain easier access to credit.
Now, that's right. Argentina defaulted on a $100 billion loan in 2001. And right now, they have been at a stalemate for some time. So this change in their house, where the approval was received by the Argentinian president to allow for the debt to be restructured, allows for Argentina to get back on the credit market. Presently, Argentina has been priced out of the South American credit for years. Argentina's neighbors, for instance, have been borrowing rates at about 5%. Argentina can't get that rates, they have been borrowing that for a far higher amount.
So I think that Argentina is actually not a part of the emerging markets. They are technically defined as a frontier market. But I guess the problems here in Argentina reflect the kind of trend that we see in the very troubled region of the emerging markets. I mean, if you look at the BRIC nations, what used to be this grouping called the BRIC, right? Brazil is in trouble. Dilma Rousseff's position is being challenged. Russia, we all know about the problems there in Russia. China is slowing down. And of course, there is India left with very high growth. And that's the only shining hope there is in the emerging markets. But Argentina, in this case, adds to the problem of emerging markets and frontier markets.
Okay, frontier. So I'm going to guess that frontier market is slightly less mature than even the emerging market. It is, in fact, a bit of the wild, wild west, maybe a lot more uncertainty and instability in those markets compared to the great hopes of the emerging markets. Is that
That's
would
right.
Be right?
So there is a very technical definition. The guy who, you know, somebody is sitting in their room right now defining what is developed, what is emerging and what is frontier, right? And it all has to do with the tradability of your instruments, of your stocks, of your bonds and other assets in those particular markets. The easier it is to trade, the more advanced you will be defined as a market. And I suppose in a country like Argentina, things would be more expensive over there, including the bonds and including the kind of risk premiums that you put into stocks, simply because they don't have as developed a set of rules as the other more advanced markets.
I mean, the question is who's making those definitions, and is there many of the theories of underdevelopment come out of the experience of South America. Basically, the metropolitan centers are defining the relationships, and they define it unfair terms. Is Argentina a victim of this process of, you know, a lack of parity in terms of who gets to define what?
I think that's the story of why Argentina needs to get out of this rut very quickly, because right now they even have problems to pay off their internal debts. In fact, Bloomberg has it that the ability for them to actually call this move to be a win is because the government now can raise billions of dollars in debt. The government is in a hurry to raise up to $12 billion. They are right now printing money to allow them to pay for internal debts. And I think the problem here is they want to stop inflation from inflicting a more aggravated pain in the economy. So this kind of instruments that, Julian, you were mentioning, they have to get back on the system where they are priced just the same as other markets within the same barometers.
I guess going back to the question of who makes these decisions and who defines these things, it's really the investors, right? You go back to the investors, they are voting with their money. If they find that your market is not so easily traded, then they would accord some kind of risk premium to those sort of markets. And the representatives of these investors, people like Morgan Stanley, Financial Times, so you got a FTSE index, FTSE creating all sorts of index over the world. In fact, in Bursa Malaysia, that is the FBM KLCI, the FTSE Bursa Malaysia KLCI index, right? It's created by somebody who's sitting on a desk somewhere defining you as to what is representative of the markets. And on the bond side, you have people like Moody's, Standard & Poor's and Fitch, according you the kind of ratings that define the kind of risk that investors should take. So these are the guys who are voting with their money, and I guess it's supra-governmental, these organizations.
I mean, the thing about it, of course, is that these supra-institutions have a kind of effect on everyday life, right? Because with debt, there's a question of repayments. Repayments affect budgets. We see, and it was just extraordinary news of the fact that Spain hasn't had a government since its last election, right? It's in limbo. And one of the parties that now is a main player is an anti-austerity party, the Podemos. The politics coming out of these demands by financial institutions internationally on local governments and on their budgets.
Extraordinary. It's so contradictory, it's so conflicting, because on one hand, you want to spend to get your nation and your citizens out of the rut. And on the other hand, by doing that spending would incur the wrath of all these rating agencies, saying that we got to charge you a price which is a lot more expensive than what you need. And so it's totally conflicting.
Yeah, and there's maybe a no-win situation for those governments. We move on to McDonald's and China. I don't know if this is a repeat of the opium wars, but anyway, counter declining
sales. McDonald's American.
Yeah, I know. But, the opium war is all about Western interests, maintaining opium sales in China. So to counter declining sales in the U.S., McDonald's is going to be going into China in a big way. They plan to open 1,000 restaurants over the next 5 years in what some people called, at least in the last century, the Middle Kingdom. Will we be seeing a Manchurian Mac next? I think is the question.
I think, Sharad, it's interesting that you mentioned whether it is an opium war, because fast food can be very addictive, right? It's pretty opium-like.
Absolutely. And sugar, salt, and fat.
McDonald's is possibly trying to latch onto the bandwagon.
McDonald's is actually doubling down on Asia. In fact, if you think about all these markets, China, Hong Kong, South Korea, along with other high-growth markets like Russia, they actually account for nearly a quarter of McDonald's total sales last year. Now, this is extremely important, because then we would see the trajectory of McDonald's on growing their businesses outside of the US. The company said that they would open about 250 restaurants in China per year for the next 5 years. So this is a real trajectory growth for that opium war that you mentioned,
I think what is important, I believe in choice. I think, McDonald's should be able to open, in every neighborhood if it wants. The question is, you don't have to buy a junk food, and you can it's a question of educating yourself and making a decision about your nutritional needs and also your needs for pleasure. And because, McDonald's represents pleasure for a lot of people. Whatever one might say about the nutritional value of the food.
I have a feeling we're going back to the sin discussion that we're continuing over the last few days. I mean, we've talked about sugar tax, whether there should be a fast food tax is another matter altogether, because this is really food for the masses. I think there has been an argument that a higher minimum wage would be bad for McDonald's business. But as McDonald's expands into countries like Hong Kong and South Korea and China, and this is part of their strategy to increase the outlets in all these three countries or these three jurisdictions, as the case may be. Hong Kong and South Korea are very rich countries, whereas China is in that part of their economic history where they're moving into middle income-dom, if that's such a word, right? And possibly that may be adding to their sales. But I'm surprised for us, places like Hong Kong and China.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.